This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Elise Glink joins us Mondays at this time. Here we go again. Hi, Elise.
Hi, John.
Got any tax wisdom or anecdotes for us today?
Sure. Don't make errors and get your taxes in by midnight.
Thanks, Elise. That concludes.
Yes, that's it. That's the whole thing. You know, it's funny. When I used to do tax segments for WGN TV, these many years ago, we were always stationed at the post office downtown waiting for people to come. And now the vast majority of people are filing electronically. And like the person who sent you that text, when you file electronically and you make sure that you have typed in your account numbers correctly, and people do change accounts. So if you've changed a bank account, you got to make sure that that's correct. But you can get your refund very, very quickly.
I filed electronically. I'm not getting a big return, but I'll take whatever I can get. And we don't have it yet, to my knowledge. So we heard a moment ago that the IRS promises within 3 weeks if you file electronically. So I hope that's true.
Yeah, I think that that is typically how it goes. When it takes longer is if you have a little bit more of a complicated return, or, as I said, if you've changed bank accounts and banks in the last year, that bounces things back. Sometimes there are other errors if something is unreadable. Typically, if you're filing by paper, this is where the problems come in. But if you're doing it electronically and all the numbers just kind of translate, that's when it goes the smoothest and easiest. And I hope that's the case for everybody out there. If you haven't actually filed yet, and we are halfway through the day when everything is due, what you may want to do is file an extension with the IRS. You'll still owe any tax bill that you had, but if they owe you money, which for most people, filing a federal return, you're going to get something back or you won't owe anything extra, that will give you all the way until, I think it's September, to get that return in. So easy and free to file an extension, and that's what you should do if you don't think you can get it done by midnight tonight.
81% of us file electronically now. That's the way folks go.
It's a huge number, and I'm really happy to see it done, because the more that we can relieve the burden on the people processing returns, the faster they're going to catch up with all the backlog that's out there.
Home builder sentiment, something you follow, has been dropping, huh?
Well, so the big news here, John, is, of course, mortgage interest rates are now above 5% for a 30-year fixed-rate loan. 5.15, that is the highest it's been in 11 or 12 years. It's still going higher.
Really? That far back? 11 or 12 years.
Yeah, we're now talking about Great Recession and what happened after the Great Recession. This is a long time ago. It is costing people, now, mortgage interest rates have literally doubled since a year ago, February. That is, they were 2.6% pretty much at the low. They're now over 5%. And it's costing people about 50% more to buy a house, not just because your mortgage interest rate has gone up by, you know, 2+ percentage points, but also because housing prices have been rising again over the last year. We saw housing prices climb nationally about 19%, here in the Chicago metropolitan area about 12%, but that just adds to the cost that everybody's paying.
You've also been following how, I want to talk to you more about real estate and also people that are changing jobs. Why are they leaving? Where are they going? We'll pick it up here in just a minute. Elise Glink from Think Glink Media is on a line. Elise Glink, you hear her Sunday mornings with Tom Fortino on WGN Radio and frequently Mondays here on WGN on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You were talking about mortgage rates. You said they've doubled now from 2.6 to over 5 on a 30-year fixed, huh?
Yeah, it's really something. I mean, even at the beginning of March, we were under 4%. We're now at 5.15%. That's according to Mortgage News Daily this morning. And, you know, what's happening, it's kind of a cascading effect, right? We see home builder sentiment dropping. because of it. You know, home builders are very worried about the price of homes, which has skyrocketed, and now you're adding on higher interest rates, and already people are starting, the demand is starting to fall. And we're seeing that the demand slipping, so sellers now are starting to drop their prices a little bit. But we're also out of whack. You know, homes, 45% of homes are selling in a week right now. I mean, it's crazy how fast homes are going for.
I was wondering about that. So with the rising interest rates, pardon me, are you suggesting that maybe people are jumping on as quickly as they can because they are afraid if they wait any longer, or if we reach the tipping point where they're not going to buy homes now because it's already too high? It sounds like you just answered that question.
Well, yes and no, John. This is where it's really interesting. So you would think that interest rates jumping up to 5.5% would mean that people would slow down the buying. And it is. And then you'd think, well, sellers see the buyers, you know, demand dropping, so they're going to drop their prices, things are going to moderate, it's all going to be good. Okay, sounds good, except what's really happening is there are a lot of homes that are being sold in off-market listings. We've had a number of conversations about these pocket listings and off-market listings where brokers are, you know, basically showing homes to people and they're not putting them on the, you know, on the internet, so they're not getting sort of a broad look. But because there really still is not enough available to buy, even for people, you know, at this high price point with this high interest rates, the people getting hurt are at the lower end. But people are still buying. There's still demand out there, and there still is not enough available for the people who want to buy it. And so we're seeing home prices continue to go up. And that's where economists, John, are really thinking. They're not quite sure what's going to happen next. Are home prices going to go up 2 to 5% this year? Are they going to go up 8 to 10%? Are they going to go up another 15%? They don't know, but we are starting to see the market, you know, slow a little bit, just a little.
773 said, John, if you got a question, please ask Elise if she thinks we're headed for another real estate bubble burst. My daughter and son-in-law are trying to buy a house, but they are all overpriced and sell for above the listed price within hours. I think they may be wise to hold off and rent. They've already sold their condo in the city.
Yeah, I hear this from a lot of different people. I don't think we're heading for a bust the way we saw it back in 2008, 9, and 10. And the reason I don't think we are is there just simply are not enough houses out there for people who can afford it. And we're not seeing people buy these houses with the kinds of crazy mortgages we saw back in 2006 and 7. We're also seeing a lot of homes being taken off the market because hedge funds and institutional funds are buying up houses and they're renting them to people. And this is depressing the number of homes that are available for sale anyway. And in fact, in some neighborhoods across the country, people are taking action. They are actively trying to encourage sellers not to sell to institutional buyers or hedge funds because they don't want their neighborhood to be half renters. They want them all to be homeowners. And that's going to be an interesting, I think, trend to watch is how many renters are moving into single-family neighborhoods, which have traditionally been strongholds of homeowners.
2 minutes left here, Elise. Let's talk about Americans who still want to change jobs. What percent of us are still or are interested in changing jobs?
More than half. Boy, you would think with all the people who have lost their jobs and gotten new jobs and just left their jobs that this number would be lower. But no, more than, according to the Grant Thornton survey, over half of employees are open to changing jobs. The majority of them are looking for more workplace flexibility. 80% of employees surveyed said they want flexibility in when and where they work. And I can feel CHROs, HR people across the country just sort of tearing their hair out as I say that. But there, you've got 21% that have left a job. 29% are actively looking for new jobs right now. And interestingly, personal debt is showing up for 43% as their greatest financial stressor. 22% are saying that they are challenged by mental health right now. The pandemic's been really tough for people.
22% challenged with mental health issues right now.
Yeah, you would. It's interesting when I talk to you.
I believe that. I thoroughly believe that.
Seriously, right? You know, if you talk to HR people across the country like I do when I'm talking about Best Money Moves, our financial wellness company, they are asking me now, can they build in a mental health partner into our financial wellness platform? And, you know, financial stress is just so directly tied to how you feel mentally, how you feel physically. In fact, the biggest buyers of our software right now are health wellness companies. It's where we're seeing the biggest amount of interest from health companies, health wellness companies, insurance companies who are trying to provide all of these different kinds of support to employees as they struggle through the days.
Elise Glink is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. She's the host of This Week in Wealth with Tom Fortino. That's Sunday mornings at 6:30, and you can always click on thinklink.com, thinklink.com. Okay, good to talk to you, Elise. Let's do it again next Monday.
Sounds great, John.
We'll be listening on Sunday. Let's talk right now with Jim Dahlke, senior editor at ChicagoWinnow.com. You hear him with us on Mondays, and here we are on a Monday. It's no exception. Jim, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, John, doing great. Thanks for having me.
So what should we start with today? You want to do Facebook nearing 15 years in Chicago and still growing, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's hard to believe, but, you know, Facebook, you know, of course, now named Meta, here in Chicago for 15 years. Next month will be the 15-year anniversary here in Chicago. First local office here launched back in 2007, just a small sales outpost, fewer than 10 employees. And now Facebook today has over 500 folks here in Chicago. We have an office here in the Loop. And, you know, it's a big percentage of its sales and marketing, but there's some executives here as well and a couple of engineering folks. So, you know, it's interesting to kind of see how Facebook has adopted Chicago and continued to grow. Their new office has definitely some Chicago-specific ties and Easter eggs, if you will. It's got a wing of conference rooms named after famous local TV commercials. Think Glenn Lerner, Bob Roarman, Empire Carpets, and also another wing dedicated to famous Chicagoans like the Obamas and Ida B. Wells.
Are one of the conference rooms named Luna Carpet Girl?
You know, they have so many Easter eggs throughout the whole place. I really love the way that they've kind of really brought Chicago's identity into their space. They've got a really funky sort of mural installation of the Chicago skyline as well, which you can check out in our story at ChicagoNO.com. So definitely, interesting to kind of see how Chicago or how Facebook has really warmed up to Chicago over the last 15 years. And a similar story to other companies. Google launched in Chicago around the same time here, or, you know, a little bit earlier, actually. But similarly, right, started with a very small sales office, and now Google, of course, has over 1,000 local employees across a couple offices in Fulton Market.
I remember when Google first opened up here, and my producer Beth and I went over there and did a tour, and we had that sort of office envy that everybody did when they would tour any of these, you know, platform offices. And I wonder if that's still a feature and if that's still an attractive feature. Everybody wants to work from home these days. Are they still totally tricked out and, you know, cool?
Totally. And, you know, Facebook, you know, they, for a big thing for theirs is, like a lot of large tech companies, is food. So, you know, Facebook has got three different cafes in-house for people to take advantage of. They've got an in-house a pastry chef who makes pastries every single day. You know, pre-pandemic, they would do every once a week, they would do cookie hunts in the office where they would send the employees around the office looking for cookies that were hidden throughout. They were made in-house. So, you know, food is definitely one of those amenities that tech companies are really leaning into.
That just ticks me off. I've never worked for a company like that. And I work for great broadcast companies. I'm on one right now. And I think what sort of annoys me is that you'll frequently hear the employees of a Google or a Facebook or someplace, and it seems like they're never happy. You know, I'm like, you guys are making good money. I'm sorry you have to live in San Francisco or Chicago, but those are swell towns. You're making good money, and you've got a pastry chef. I'm done now, Jim. You can talk.
I know. The perks are really something. And, you know, I was just reading a story, too, in the Wall Street Journal the other day that, lots of companies are leaning into booze as well. So pretty much every company that's building a new office this day has got an in-house bar that they're being asked to create through their architects as well. So cookies and booze, two of the top items on the wish list for new tech companies.
We have coffee pods. Okay, Ralph Lauren-backed fashion materials startup raises $85 million. What are you writing about there, sir?
Yeah, this company is called Natural Fiber Welding, NFW for short. And I like to think of this company as actually, you know, one of the most innovative companies you've probably never heard of. They're down in downstate Peoria, so far cry from Silicon Valley, far from Chicago's tech epicenter as well. But really, really interesting business. They're doing some high-performance, all-natural materials for companies like Ralph Lauren, Alexander McQueen, Patagonia. Now they're even working with IBM. So they have a couple different products. One is a product called Claris, which takes recycled cotton and turns it into new high-performance materials. And they've got another product called Miriam, which is a leather alternative. They basically use hemp, waste cork, and coconut to create a leather-like product that they can use in shoes and cars and lots of different ways. And so, yeah, $85 million for a company down in Peoria, not a bad raise at all. This is a really, really interesting business that's got some big names behind it.
Where are they in Peoria? I got friends down there, and I remember when they kind of hit with the hemp, faux fabrics. Is that a big operation? Do they employ a lot of people? Do you know much about it?
Yeah, so just last year they opened a new 110,000 square foot manufacturing space down in downtown Peoria. Uh-huh. So you know that's where they're going to use funding from this route to continue to build out that space and scale their production, and they say create some new products as well.
Forget Zoom, you say. What should we think about here?
Yeah, you know, we've got a new group in Chicago, really interesting. It's called Chi Tech IRL. This is a networking and events group led by four accomplished tech executives here in the city. They want to bring people back together. So the tech networking event was a staple of the startup community for years and years and years. Obviously, the pandemic threw a wrench into that, and now as you know, we are approaching what appears to be a likely end of the pandemic, or at least a lessening of it. This group wants to get folks back together, so they've got a year of events planned for the rest of the year, really to bring the tech community together. It was an important piece of what makes up startup communities, not just networking but developing relationships. So check out Chi Tech IRL. This is a group that's really trying to get the tech community back together in the city.
Okay, so then I'll see a schedule of meet and greets, that sort of thing?
Yeah, meet and greets. You can think food, drinks, networking, music, all that kind of stuff. Nothing too serious, nothing too formal, but just a chance for people of all kind of across the spectrum of business, right? So this is not just for founders. This is not just for investors. This is for the marketing employee, the early career folks in product engineering. Really, anybody in Chicago's tech scene can check out the Chi Tech IRL.
Let's just close with the numbers. Chicago startups raised how much? Chicago startups raised how much money in the first quarter of this year?
$1.4 billion, which is definitely a haul. Not quite on the pace of last year, but not too shabby.
And that doesn't put us at the front of the pack. The Bay Area, $28 billion. New York, $10 billion. It does put us ahead of the Austins and, or no, not actually we're behind Austin, but ahead of Philadelphia and Miami, right?
That's right. So, Chicago, I think, would like to be on that level of above, ahead of Austin, ahead of Seattle, ahead of D.C., although just kind of behind those cities. But, it's a year-long race, right? So a quarter is kind of only telling one piece of the puzzle there. So definitely a lot of funding coming into Chicago. Billion-dollar quarters are a relatively new occurrence. This wasn't happening before 2020. So the fact that the 1.4 is not just off the pace, but not too shabby.
Jim Dahlke is a senior editor at Chicago Inno. Well done. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Are we ready with Steve Grzanich? He's got another business report.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A 21-story apartment development is being planned just east of the Magnificent Mile in the Streeterville neighborhood. Cranes reports it'll be the first rental project there in about 5 years. Chicago-based Maverick Development is leading a consortium with plans to build a 248-unit high-rise at Grand and St. Clair. The building will feature smaller apartments in the range of 492 to 706 square feet. The development will also include 41,000 square feet of office space, ground floor retail space, and parking spaces. Completion is set for 2024. Northwestern Medicine is planning a new medical office in Oak Brook featuring outpatient services. The $83 million development will be located at 1001 Commerce Drive. Crane says the 67,000 square foot space will include doctor's offices, ambulatory care, diagnostic imaging, physical therapy, and a lab. Northwestern expects it to be completed in 2024. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you, sir. By the way, Steve Alexander, I mentioned a moment ago that the average trade-in value for your vehicle's gone up 81%. The number on that, dollars and cents, is $9,300. Buyers got an average of about $9,300 for their trade-ins. Those car commercials that say your trade-in is worth now more than ever is more now than ever is those are true. Those are
good
true. $9,300 bucks. Speaking of business, what's the business of food today?
Well, you know, I know you've been complaining about the weather, John, but I should point out that the tulips are blooming on Michigan Avenue again.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Has nothing to do with the business of food, but so that I point that out.
Thank you.
Several days ago, I told the story of Chris Curran, a longtime Chicago chef who was locked out by the pandemic. And during the lockdown, living in the western burbs, he started a restaurant in St. Charles with his wife called The Graceful Ordinary. And he mentioned that one of the local suppliers of meat and eggs is Slagle Family Farms. Well, Louis John Slagle runs the company. He's a fifth-generation farmer about 100 miles south of Chicago.
My great-great-great-grandpa settled a mile from where my wife and I live. So our family has been farming here for over 125 years.
And after decades of raising livestock, the Slagles decided to cut out the middlemen, meaning the big packing plants.
Just a true focus on quality and not to crank out millions of pounds of product.
And with an eye on selling their meat to Chicago chefs.
So I actually just picked up a copy of Chicago Magazine.
And went down the list of high-rated restaurants.
I did cold calls for maybe a year.
How'd that go?
Got turned away plenty, but got enough chefs that were interested in letting me stop by, brought samples around.
Yeah, word of mouth grew, and the Slagle family brand is all over Chicago now.
And we sell in grocery stores, retail, high-end butchers.
As a small packer,
the challenge is we do have to sell every part of every animal.
Which created another opportunity.
We started a raw pet food brand as well called Farm to Bowl.
Beef, pork, poultry, eggs, they raise and process it all at two USDA-inspected plants in Forest, Illinois. And customers concerned about where their food comes from have questions.
What breed the livestock is, or if it was, you know, had access to the outside, which is something that's important to us.
There are limits to that, though.
I just got a message the other day asking if our chickens were out on pasture or not. I think it was, you know, 8 degrees on the day they emailed me, and if the chickens were on pasture, they'd be frozen to death.
Louis John Slagle, one of the many Slagles running the farm and processing plants in central Illinois.
And I have 6 brothers and 6 sisters.
And Mom and Dad are still involved, too. SlagleFamilyFarm.com. From the farm to your belly, today is National Animal Cracker Day, which could be a Marx Brothers holiday, too, couldn't it? That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
What's the top story, Amy? What do you want to make sure we hear from you today?
Well, certainly, I'm sure you were just talking about Internal Revenue Service, what I was calling back in, but essentially, the Biden administration is looking for more support for the IRS because they've already said this is going to be a challenging tax season. There's not enough staffing. What's interesting, there hasn't been enough staffing at the IRS for a number of years. Really, when you look at it, the rate at which it could have grown, really the late 70s is when the staffing number should have gone up and didn't. So looking at that number is very interesting. But also, the president also has taken some steps to ensure that federal dollars will support U.S. manufacturing. So in that infrastructure bill, that $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure package, there's language there about iron and steel and things like that coming from U.S. sources, whether it's a bridge or a highway or a water pipe or internet or whatever it is. There is also, however, a process to waive those requirements in case there's not enough domestic producers making it, or in case the materials cost too much. 25% is the threshold. So if buying an American product would increase the project's cost by more than 25%, they will waive that so we could buy. But with the goal of increasing domestic production all the while to reduce our reliance on foreign sources for those kind of materials.
FDA's investigating Lucky Charms. Bob Surratt was talking about this morning and said the details weren't in. Do you know much more?
Yeah, it's really still kind of a little bit vague, but indeed the Food and Drug Administration has been investigating Lucky Charms after dozens of people complained of illnesses after eating it. They have more than 100 complaints. Of course, the FDA said in a statement they take this kind of thing very, very seriously. A lot of people have also posted to a food safety website. It's called iwaspoisoned.com. A lot of people complain of various symptoms after eating the product. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see if that results in a recall or what's going on there exactly.
You had information about a 21-story apartment project off of Mag Mile and Peloton's fees going up. Let's try and connect later this week and talk about those then.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, John.
That's Amy Guth.